Hopkins. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket of will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics.
Sean Payton was horrible in clock management. That should never be the case with this New Orleans Saints team.
Well, we're waiting.
Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Welcome into a brand new week of Drive Time Sports. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Happy as always to be along with you on the afternoon drive. We have all kinds of stuff to talk about as we get rolling on a brand new week. Today here on the show, we are going to talk to new USU Eastern men's basketball coach Bill Evans. Coach Evans is an icon in the state of Utah as far as coaches go. He's the all-time winningest coach in Southern Utah history. He took the T-Birds to their one and only NCAA tournament appearance, and now he's going to head the USU Eastern basketball program. We had a press conference earlier today. You can watch that press conference at CastleCountryRadio.com or just head on over to Drive Time Sports' Facebook page or USU Eastern Athletics. So a variety of different ways for you to watch the press conference from earlier today. Coach Evans will join us over the phone. That's coming up here in just a bit. Also, I do want to talk about the NFL draft. A lot to get into as far as that is concerned. How all teams fared. Who won the draft? Well, I got to tell you, I was highly impressed with what the San Francisco 49ers managed to put together. I thought they had an outstanding draft through and through. We talked about this on Friday. I love what the Green Bay Packers did as far as Jordan Love. Outside of that, I don't know that they really did enough to help their team for the now. This is a team that was one game away from the Super Bowl. I thought the Ravens did extremely well. I think you absolutely have to give the Ravens an A for what they managed to accomplish over the three-day draft. If you're not familiar with it, Devin DuVernay, who can flat-out fly down the field. They add him in the third round. They did draft J.K. Dobbins in the second round. They have a couple of good runners now to complement Lamar Jackson and Mark Ingram. But as usual, the Ravens just did good. They had six picks in the first three rounds. They maneuvered with some trades. They got Patrick Queen. Queen was a guy late in the first round that I couldn't believe was still on the board. So I thought the Ravens were lights out in this draft. I mentioned the Minnesota Vikings. The Vikings were very, very good as well. And again, they maneuvered around a couple of times in this draft as well. I thought the Vikings really knocked it out of the park in the second round as they added Ezra Cleveland. He's a player that I really thought would go in the first round. He goes in the second. They grabbed Jeff Gladney. He has the tools to be a starter, I think, out of the gate. The Vikings had 15 picks, so a little bit different than what we saw from the Ravens. They did a great job. They added Justin Jefferson. That fills an immediate need because, remember, they traded Stephon Diggs. They used one of those picks to bring in Justin Jefferson. And then in the fourth round, they drafted Troy Dye. And Dye out of Oregon is a linebacker that lacks a little bit of size, but he's got length, and he's excellent in coverage. And he was one of my most interesting players going into the draft. If you watch Pac-12 football, you know exactly what he's capable of doing. And the Vikings grabbed him in the fourth round. And there were teams all around Minnesota that could have used Dye, yet he went to the Minnesota Vikings. So I thought the Vikings did very well. I would give them an A. We can talk about Matt Rhule and the Carolina Panthers as well. The Panthers used all seven of their picks on defensive players. This is a team to really follow. Matt Rhule is a program changer. That's what he was in college. But the Panthers grabbed Derrick Brown in the first round. And if you listen to the draft show or you listen last week, I think Derrick Brown has the capability of being the best player in this draft. Great kid on and off of the field. I really don't know if the Panthers had a pick that I looked at and said, huh, really? They go Troy Pride as well. Troy Pride's a kid I watched a lot of while he was at Notre Dame. Troy Pride is excellent in zone coverage. Not that he can't play man, but I don't know that Troy Pride ever lived up to the expectations at Notre Dame. But I believe he has the ability, and he's going to adjust just fine. So all in all, I'd give the Panthers an A. I thought Matt Rhule did a terrific job with this draft. There were some winners. As far as the big losers, we can get into this a little bit later on in the show. I was a little disappointed in the New England Patriots. I don't know that New England did enough for me to think that they could be the top team out of the AFC East. Philadelphia, at times, they looked okay. I still don't really understand the Jalen Hurts deal, that selection in the second round. They had other needs, and they used a second-round pick to back up Carson Wentz. And for those who say, well, Carson Wentz can't stay healthy, I understand that, trust me. But there were other options, and I thought that was a little high for Jalen Hurts to begin with. The Seattle Seahawks, they did some questionable things as well. Daryl Taylor, I'm not a big fan of, right? It's one of the worst picks I thought that Seattle had throughout this draft. So we'll go over this a little bit later on. The NFL has definitely given us a lot to talk about over the last couple of weeks. And we will continue to break down the draft throughout the week. Another aspect of the show today, I want to talk about The Last Dance, the Michael Jordan documentary. If you missed it last night, parts 3 and 4, I call it the Michael Jordan documentary because really that's what it's turned into. He's the focus of everything. But there were highlights on Dennis Rodman last night. This guy was so, so important to those two championships that Chicago won. Hands down, the last two against the Utah Jazz. Rodman was an intricate part to that. It really painted Rodman, I thought, in a positive light. And it also really gave us the clear picture of how Phil Jackson was able to maintain Dennis Rodman throughout that Bulls run as well. So we'll touch on that. We'll get an NBA update. May 8th now looks like the date where team facilities will open back up. What does that mean for the start of the NBA season? So that's what's coming up on today's show. We're going to talk to Coach Bill Evans of the USU Eastern men's basketball team. We'll talk The Last Dance documentary and a possible start date for the NBA. Plus, we'll recap the NFL draft. That's all coming up right here on this Monday edition of Drive Time Sports.
What you listening to?
Big Sports Radio Guy.
Prepare the water cooler, that we may gather around it later and discuss things.
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
Last week we talked high school hoops. Jeff Cinceros is the new Emory High School basketball coach. Today we're going to talk USU Eastern. They too have a new coach at the helm, Bill Evans. We just reported that a few moments ago. Bill Evans was introduced today. You can watch his introductory press conference by visiting Drive Time Sports on Facebook or USU Eastern Athletics. But we actually have Bill joining us right now over the phone. We're going to talk about his decorated resume and also look ahead to what the future holds for USU Eastern. Again, Bill Evans joining us right now over the phone. Coach, a pleasure to get you on today. Thank you for the time.
Same. Thank you. Thank you for your interest.
Absolutely, Coach. I know it's going to be a really fascinating season. You're coming to USU Eastern. You have a very decorated resume. So before we get rolling, I guess the first question I have to ask you is, what piqued your interest with the USU Eastern basketball job?
The opportunity to coach, because I was not coaching last year, the opportunity to coach at this level and the opportunity to coach in an area that I'm familiar with and, in fact, love. Spent a lot of time in Utah and Idaho, and I love this area. So I wasn't going to go to New York to coach, I can tell you that.
You mentioned not coaching last year, and for someone who's got 23 years at the D1 level, Coach, how difficult was it to take a year off and not work at all as far as coaching basketball?
Yeah, it was hard. The benefit of the whole thing was that I got to see my 15-year-old play every single game, so that was great. Because I've got two sons that are a little bit older than Kansas. That Dave, my second oldest son, played in two state championship games, and I didn't see one game because I was on the road with my team at Southern Utah. And the same thing with Trey. Their team played in the state championships and won the Constellation Championship, and I didn't get to see him play either because I was on the road with my team. So that was a bonus. But, when you have been doing this as long as I have, and you have the passion that I have for coaching. It was hard sometimes, but I've been really fortunate in my career too, and I kept reminding myself of that. But you know, you can only do the dishes so many times a day, and so I'm grateful that even though I'll still have to do the dishes, I'll be able to coach too.
Well, let's talk about your experience, Coach. And I want to start with Southern Utah. From time to time, we'll talk Southern Utah University here on the show. Of course, Coach Todd Jeffs at Emory High School, he was one of your players at Southern Utah. You were there for a very long time. You guys went to the NCAA tournament, the only time in school history. And you're the all-time winningest coach in SUU history. So a very decorated resume from your time in Cedar City.
Well, first off, you know, I love that community, and I appreciate Jack Bishop who gave me an opportunity and President Sherritt to coach at the Division I level and coach at my alma mater. You know, I have nothing but fond memories of my time there. I recruited a lot of Utah kids. In fact, at one time, in some games, I think I started three kids from Cedar City High School or Canyon View High School. The James brothers and Steve Barnes all played in Cedar, and at one time, I'm pretty sure they were all on the floor and maybe even started games for me there. So, great community. It's a great university. Really grateful for that opportunity.
Yeah, Coach, as I mentioned, you did go to the NCAA tournament, excuse me, one time when you were at Southern Utah. What was that experience like to coach in the dance?
Well, I've been to the NCAA tournament a few times, but taking your own team there was a great experience. You know, we were a 14 seed, and we drew Boston College, and Boston College was ranked in the top 10 in the country, and we had to go all the way to New York to play that game, which that was hard, but it was a great opportunity. And I remember telling my guys, I said, you know, I want you guys, I didn't say it quite like this, by the way, but I want you guys to know that I didn't come all this way just to play in the game. I came to win the game. And we were up at halftime and ended up losing by three. So we played really, really well. That was a great experience for all of us.
You spent 16 seasons at Southern Utah, Coach. Then most recently, you move on to Idaho State. And in fact, you were the Big Sky Conference Coach of the Year back in 2016. Tell me about your time at Idaho State.
Again, I've been really, really lucky. I've said that about 10 times already, so I'm going to try not to say it again. But another place that, you know, that I'm grateful for, the people were great. Jeff Tingey hired me there, and he was always very, very supportive of me. And we had some good teams. You know, we graduated 22 straight guys, and I just wasn't able to win enough games for the administration, the new administration. I've had tough luck with new presidents.
Again, our guest right now is Coach Bill Evans, new head coach of the USU Eastern basketball program. Coach, let's talk about the task that lies at hand. I know there was a press conference earlier today, and you've answered a couple of these questions once already, but I have to ask once again the difference in going from JUCO or from the NCAA Division I level down to the JUCO level. You mentioned earlier today you don't think it's going to be that different, that much difference at all.
It's not going to be any different. The rules are different. There's a lot more flexibility in junior college basketball with recruiting and those kinds of things. And sometimes you might recruit a young man that's not quite as gifted academically. But I've had a lot of success, or we've had a lot of success graduating our guys because it's important to me. But coaching is coaching, and I'm going to coach some really good players at USU Eastern. And probably a lot of them that are above the Big Sky or Big the Summit or above the Summit League with in regards to talent. So I'm excited. I'm looking forward to it. And coaching again is coaching. The rules are a little different, but I'm really excited.
Obviously, at the D1 level, Coach, you've had interactions with kids at the junior college level. So what were you looking for when you were a head coach recruiting at the JC level? Was there a trait maybe in particular that you were looking from a character standpoint of a kid that you were bringing up?
Oh, I, I mean, the first thing that we have to do, or we're going to do, I think you have to do it, is you have to recruit kids that want to get a degree, they want to be coached, they want to get better. You know, they're going to be good teammates, they're going to be good in the community, they're going to be good on campus with their, you know, with their classmates. Because if you don't have that, then I'm probably not going to coach you. In fact, I'm sure I'm not going to coach you. So that's the first thing we look at when we recruit guys to come to USU Eastern, is what kind of person are they, for sure.
Coach, as far as your familiarity with the program itself, you had mentioned today you've been through Price, but you've never actually been to Price up until recently. So how familiar are you, with the USU Eastern basketball program?
Well, I'm really familiar with the program, and when I said that, you know, I've been to Price 25 times, but I would go to the gym, then I would go back to my room, then I would go back to the gym. I didn't really explore, so to speak, the city, but I've done that now, and it's a nice city. I'm really looking forward to getting home and getting my roots down a little bit, and you know, with the virus, you don't know exactly when that's going to be, but I'm excited about it.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. I mean, it definitely does cast kind of a cloud of uncertainty over the whole deal. So how do you handle the rest of the spring and maybe even most of the summer trying to put together a basketball team with this particular situation?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of uncertainty. And so for me to tell you exactly how I'm going to do that would probably be a guess. I do think, though, that there are guys out there that I would want to try to tie down as quickly as I could, and then make sure and have a couple of scholarships when things calm down a little bit for some, maybe another guy or so.
Coach, this team was so freshman heavy last year. Have you began to take a look at the talent that was on this team last year and evaluate that to see if you'll bring which kids you'll bring back, if any at all? Is that something you've looked at yet?
You know, I haven't worked on that yet. I'm reluctant to come into a new place and start, for lack of a better word, run a bunch of guys off because I think this or I think that, because I don't know them well enough. I don't know what kind of people they are. And I think it sends a bad message. And I also think this is a really tough time. And for me to disrupt some kids' academic plans and playing plans, pretty tough on them, and I don't want to do that. Now, I've already had a couple kids that have decided to move somewhere else, and one was one of a former player, Gabe Oliveira, has decided to move, and also one of the kids that Coach Vandal signed early has decided not to come to USU Eastern. So, you know, I want to have enough flexibility that I can bring in some of the guys that I know that I think can help us win, though.
Have you began to at least consider what the coaching staff will look like? Is that something that's been brought up at all?
You know, I'm not far enough into the program to know what kind of salary I have for an assistant, and a lot of times that determines, you know, what kind of person you're going to bring in. Does he have more experience or less experience? The more experienced guys would require a little bit more money. The less experienced guys, you know, not as much. So I really can't answer that question for you.
Coach, we'll end with this. I want to get familiar with your on-court philosophies, especially for those who have never seen you coach. I know you talked about the offensive scheme earlier today in your press conference, and you mentioned it's very difficult to score points in a half-court set, which is obviously good news for those fans who like the game going up and down. They like a very fast game.
I'm going to play as fast as I can, but I'm not going to, you know, dictate that we get the ball up the floor quickly and shoot it quickly. I don't think, to me, that's not good basketball. We're going to try to get the ball up the floor quickly and get really good shots, layups, wide open threes in transition. If we don't get those, you know, then we're gonna put guys in positions where hopefully they can be successful and we can give them the ball so they can help us win games.
Coach Bill Evans, again, new head coach of the USU Eastern Basketball Program. Coach, I definitely appreciate the time. Before I let you go, maybe a message that you have for the community here, a small community that loves their junior college basketball. Anything you would like to say to them?
Yeah, you know, I'm excited to get to meet you, you all you people that are interested in USU Eastern basketball, and I'm excited to meet the ones that aren't interested. I like people, and I hope that you'll reach out to me and introduce yourself. And you know, the more friends I have, the merrier for me.
Hey, Coach, it's definitely a pleasure. Again, thank you for the time.
You bet, my pleasure. Thanks a lot.
Again, that's Bill Evans, head coach of the USU Eastern basketball team, taking out the time to join us on the show today. We'll have more on Coach Evans in the very near future. And again, you can get the official press release by visiting CastleCountryRadio.com. We're going to pause for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750, the play-by-play home of the USU Eastern Eagles.
We're back on Drive Time Sports. Talk NBA basketball, and of course that means we're going to bring in Jamison Welsh, Drive Time Sports NBA analyst, joins us each week. Jamison, always a pleasure. I appreciate you making out the time again today. Thank you.
Oh, not a problem. Thanks for having me as always.
I always look forward to the conversations, and I know there's plenty to get into. First off, we'll start by talking about the Last Dance documentary. We got parts 3 and 4 over the weekend. You and I had a conversation about this a little bit off of the cuff. I was a little bit disappointed in episodes 3 and 4. I thought 1 and 2 got off to a huge bang. The Rodman aspect was obviously entertaining, but outside of that, I thought that it lacked a little bit of the drama compared to the last two. Now, that doesn't mean that that's going to be the suit the rest of the way, because I think we got some very interesting storylines popping up. You got to remember, we are essentially at the All-Star break now as we finish up parts 3 and 4.
Yeah, I've actually seen the first 8 episodes. I was very fortunate to get several weeks over the last week or so. So I saw all of it, and for the most part, I said the last two. Very interesting. You'll be all right going forward. But it's like anything else. I mean, they're doing a really good job of painting the whole picture. You know, that's the thing we have to remember. We're huge sports fans. A lot of people listening to your show are huge sports fans. So they know a lot of this stuff already. But a lot of these docs, especially the docs that are like widespread like this, they're for the casual fan or the person. Whenever you're creating a doc, you have to create something that if the person's never watched the game before, they would be able to understand what you're presenting. So that's where it is at. But with that being said, it was, you know, still good content, good quality. But, you know, for us, there was nothing that we really didn't know about outside of like MJ going to get Dennis out of his Chicago apartment and tell him, hey, we need you back to work. But, yeah, that's kind of odd. I was going to ask you, Stephen Sabalos had a situation where he kind of went AWOL in 96. I know Derrick Rose had a situation where he left the Knicks when he was on the Knicks a few years ago. Is there any other situations that a guy just bounced and just kind of, you know, said, I'll be there when I get back
I can't think of one in the NBA. You know, we have Big Lincoln Kennedy on the show quite often. He has told us several stories about the Barrett Robbins situation with the Raiders in the Super Bowl. Right, I think everyone is aware of that situation. It's a different sport. As far as the NBA is concerned, no, I really don't think we've had that. And what's so interesting about it is it wasn't as if it was unexpected, right? Jordan did tell Jackson, or he told Phil, look, this guy's not coming back in 48 hours. You can give him 48 hours, but he's not coming back. And Phil, being the Zen master that he is, he decided, and Phil knew, look, regardless of the situation, when MJ told Phil, this guy ain't coming back in 48 hours, Phil knew. But I believe Phil also knew, look, this is the only way we're going to get this guy for a stretch run in the postseason, and we absolutely need him. So that's a unique situation all the way around.
Right.
So that was definitely an interesting aspect. I did not know that Jordan went to his apartment to grab him. Very fascinating stuff there. But look, one of the things that I did like about this last weekend is it did paint Rodman in a sense where I don't want to say you pity Rodman, but it didn't portray him to be just the insane lunatic crazy wild child that I do believe a lot of the younger generations view him as, because that's not what Rodman was, right? And so the fact that they were able to highlight what he accomplished with the Detroit Pistons, how important he was to that team, his relationship with Chuck Daly, very Mike Tyson custom auto-esque, right? That's the way I took it.
Right, right. And that's the thing, like, we always have to remember that these people, these players are people as well, you know. You know, they're, at the end of the day, they're people. They have, you know, great jobs, and they're high-profile people, but they're people. They make mistakes. They have their issues. They have their faults. They have their things that they got to do. And Dennis Rodman is no different than any other regular working person. He has his things. He has his vices. He has his things that he has to work on. And his own mental health, he would have probably not have worked out if they told him he couldn't have left. He could have left. So this is one of those things where they did the best for the situation for that time, but that's where I think Phil Jackson probably is his best attribute as coach, because as X's and O's and game strategy, he's up there, but I don't think he's the best game strategist out there. But in terms of like managing egos and, you know, putting out fires, probably his best. I mean, just based off of all the situations he's been in. Like, people don't take a look at it, but those 90s teams, they had a lot of stuff going on with the Bulls. But look at the 2000 Lakers teams. You had two of the most polarizing players ever on one setting. And then in the second end of that, you had a team with Lamar Odom, Andrew Bynum, Kobe, and you also had Mineral Peace. So those four individuals are four of the most unique people that we've ever seen in this NBA for all different types of reasons. And he found a way to make that work. So, yeah, Phil, he did what any great coach would do and created a – off-the-wall solution that would temporarily work.
Right, and I also thought that it did highlight, and look, Jazz fans probably don't want to hear this. I'm just being real when I say it. Without Dennis Rodman, the Jazz probably win an NBA championship. If you remove Dennis Rodman from the equation of the Chicago Bulls, the Jazz probably win one of two, if not both, of those final series. That's how important Dennis Rodman was against the likes of Karl Malone. That's just how important he was defensively. When you look at that team, Dennis Rodman, maybe not at that particular time in his career, but when you look at the grand scheme of things, on-ball defenders, you're going to be hard-pressed to find better than Scottie Pippen or Dennis Rodman, and that pays so many dividends when you're talking about what Michael Jordan's able to do on the offensive side of the ball.
Well, also, here's the thing, too. You're absolutely correct. However, the thing about Rodman, though, it all depends on who they replaced him with. So they basically replaced Horace Grant with Dennis Rodman. Like, they always need that power forward to do dirty work and handle that part of the game. So if they replaced him with someone that gave 90% of what Dennis gave them production-wise, or 80%, they would have been fine. But just to leave him off the team completely and fill them in with like a Corey Blunt or a Jason Caffey, then yeah, they probably would not have won. But they needed a above-average player or better at that spot, and they got that production for 3 years.
Yeah, you also needed a guy that was capable, or at least mentally capable, of handling the idea of being the third or fourth option on the offensive side of the ball. See, Rodman wouldn't have cared one bit. Rodman didn't care anything about his offensive numbers, right? So whoever you replace him with, it better be someone that is fully capable, fully accepted the idea of not shooting or not scoring on the offensive side of the ball. And there really wasn't a lot of players like that at that stage in the season, at that stage in the era of the NBA.
Yeah, I mean, Rodman's a true one of one. Like, we don't have those kind of guys. A lot of people like throw out Draymond Green, and Draymond Green's a good player for what he does. However, he's not a Rodman. Now,
no.
There's things Draymond does better than Rodman, but when it comes to the defensive end, Rodman's a much better player. They're both very versatile, but in terms of just player and rebounding, like, I'll take Rodman all day long. But Draymond's able to push the ball and initiate offenses, so that's where his strength kicks in as well. But, yeah, Rodman was a true one-of-one. Like, he was a true one-of-one, very unique. He had guys go to open gyms and just take shots so he can learn the trajectory of rebounds so he can get a better feel for how the ball's going to come off the rim when it's missed. That's special. We don't have that anymore in this day and age.
No question. No question. Again, Jameson Welsh, our guest right now, as we talk NBA basketball. And again, The Last Dance documentary right now is episodes 3 and 4. We are at the All-Star break. We'll get 5 and 6 coming up this Sunday. 3 weeks left in this 5-week piece that ESPN has put together. Jameson, let's move away from the Chicago Bulls documentary. Let's talk about the NBA and the idea of possibly getting a resolution to the season. It was thought that maybe team facilities would open back up May 1st. We know that is no longer the case. May 8th is now that date, which means, in my mind, at the absolute earliest, we're getting NBA basketball back at June 8th. And I throw the June 8th date out because you and I were just crunching some numbers before we hopped on air. That seems to be the date that you should have circled. It's going to be very difficult to get through a postseason if you don't, in fact, start by June 8th.
Yeah. Here's the thing. Everything keeps on getting pushed back because the draft is normally in June, and we know that's not going to happen. We can't have a draft without a draft order. So that's the one thing. But also, it's a weird situation right now based off of everything that's going on because no one knows what's the situation is, and also you're basically pushing back next season. The longer this goes on, like if this isn't settled by June 1st, if they don't have a decision by June 1st, start of next season is going to be pushed back probably until at minimum Thanksgiving, probably Christmas time. That's just the realistic situation or beyond of what's happening here. So we'll definitely see, but there's a lot of things at stake here. We know that the TV companies, they want games on TV. We know the owners do. The players want safety, but it's going to be interesting because somebody's going to come up on the short end of the stick, and it's going to be the players. The players, they do want to play, but they want to be healthy first, but they might not have the choice. The NBA is going to try to finish out this season one way or another, and I can't wait to see how that goes, whether it's in one central location. You can't really travel like that like these guys are used to doing, but I think we have it in one central location, like whether it's in L.A., Vegas, like that, and keep it rolling.
Yeah, you mentioned the players wanting to stay healthy, and I believe, what is the date? Is it May 15th? Is that when the checks will stop flowing in?
Is it May 1st or May 15th?
It's a date in May, regardless of the date. Players right now, and I don't believe that every player in the league is saying, look, I don't want to play. I believe you have some players that really don't care, but that'll change the dynamic of things as well. When those checks stop flowing in, and again, I'm not saying that the players don't have any urgency here, but it's just one more domino in the process that will fall, right? Once that happens, how is that going to change the landscape and the urgency that we see from both sides to get things moving?
It's almost like a lockout tactic, you know? Because we know there's a lot of max contracts and big contracts in the NBA. There's also smaller ones as well, and there's, you know, guys that have other bills and other situations involved. So it's not just, oh, we'll tax to take out half and whatnot. If you take out 25% of anyone's pay, it's going to hurt. Like, it's going to be affected. And especially if it's pre-tax, that's tough. So we'll see what happens. It seems like a lockout tactic, though, because usually when a lockout comes, you know, guys stop getting paid money and guys still have bills coming in. And, you know, it kind of forces you to hurry up and finish things up to get things back on track. That's not necessarily the case here. So I really want to see here, you know, how long this goes, because guys have child support, guys got families got to take care of, guys have bills, and even though they make a lot, they also do spend a lot and may not be the best managers of money. So, yeah, especially guys on, like, smaller contracts. So if you're making the minimum or right around there, yes, it's $1 million, but after taxes and a 25% cut, it's way different, and you got $1 million bills with $250,000 income rate. Don't really mix, so it'll be fascinating to see.
Jameson Welsh again joining us to talk NBA basketball. Jameson, it is always fun to get you on the show. I definitely appreciate the time. I do believe we're going to have some more groundbreaking topics over the next few weeks to talk about. Hopefully, the idea of the start of a season. I think each week that passes, it becomes a little bit more grim to get a conclusion to this season. But nonetheless, I definitely appreciate the time, and we'll do it again next week.
Yep, not a problem.
I understand you're a real sports fan.
Well, then there's only one answer.
Turn on the radio. You'll never have to compromise again.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM at 7:50 a.m.
Back on Drive Time Sports. move over to the NFL draft. It wrapped up Saturday night. I'll bring in Travis Anderson to help close out this edition of the show. Winners and losers. Travis, your big winner.
I think I have a couple winners. Can I go a couple? Or do you want one?
No.
I like what the Colts did. I like what the 49ers have done. I like what Tampa Bay's done. I think that's to start out with my winners.
Tampa Bay, to me, was an interesting team. I know you like what they did, really, in the first round, and that's kind of what it's going off of. Outside of that, though, I honestly thought the best pick for Tampa Bay, I don't think it was Wirfs. I actually think it was Antoine Winfield.
So they
added a piece to the back end. They needed some safety help. They get an all-around safety in Winfield. But really, I don't know what they were doing, say, in the third round. Okay, they draft Keyshawn Vaughn. I thought there were better options on the board at that particular time for Tampa Bay, and I still don't like what they have at the running back spot. So I can see some good things. They did trade up a spot again to land Tristan Wirfs, and I know you were really high on that. San Francisco, for me, was a team that I would give an A. I thought they won really big. As far as the NFC West is concerned, they had the best draft. There's no question about it, because they also added Trent Williams, and they got him for next to nothing. It's a nice move, considering that Joe Staley retired. Right, so Brandon Ayuk coming out of Arizona State. We were live on the air when they had drafted Ayuk. I like it. I guess maybe the only question I would have for San Francisco, why didn't they select a cornerback in this draft? That I don't know. But they did get Javon Kinlaw, and I know a couple of coaches that have told me Javon Kinlaw is the best they have seen coming out of that school in 20 to 25 years, and that's saying something. So I agree with you. I think the Niners were fantastic. Tampa, I don't know if I can really give Tampa a great grade. I don't particularly care for some of the moves they made. Indianapolis, they did okay as well. They went with Jacob Eason over Jake Fromm. It was really interesting to see how Fromm just plummeted down the draft board. Round five,
yeah. Buffalo, right?
Buffalo.
Yeah, Buffalo. I think that's a wasted pick by the Bills, but I don't know what Buffalo is doing with that pick, but yeah, he fell tremendously.
You need a backup, I guess, is the way to look at it. Jonathan Taylor for the Colts, I didn't think was a bad pick either. So all in all, yeah, the Colts did okay. For me, though, the big winner, Baltimore and Minnesota. I really love what the Vikings did throughout this entire draft. I mentioned it. Justin Jefferson, I thought, was a steal. Troy Dye, I thought they did phenomenal with. I think this kid is going to be very good. Jeff Gladney in the first round. But again, the sticking point for me with the Minnesota Vikings, they got tackle help with Ezra Cleveland. So the Vikings and the Ravens, if I had to pick, those would be the two best selections for me, or the two best teams, the two best winners over the course of the draft. Losers, who didn't you like?
I didn't like what Atlanta did. I think their first round pick was questionable. Not sure I like what Atlanta did. And the Giants, they're at, what, four? I don't like that pick.
Yeah, I don't like what Atlanta did in the first round. I agree with you, A.J. Terrell. I think it's a little bit of a stretch. But if you look at Atlanta and what they managed to do in the mid-rounds, they got Matt Hennessy. Really, he's one of the top centers in the draft, and you have to look at what Alex Mack, where he's sitting at right now as far as his contract. So I like what the Falcons did there. But I agree with you on the A.J. Terrell pick. I wasn't a fan with it. Who else did you say was your loser?
Giants. I don't think they got the best offensive lineman in the draft. Sitting
and they could have.
And they could have, and I don't think they did. I think they reached.
That's the problem, is that they could have had. They had their pick of any offensive lineman that they wanted. Now, I'm with you. Andrew Thomas was a little bit of a, huh?
Yeah, if you're going to take one of those guys, I think he'd be fourth on the list of the linemen.
But they got Matt Peart as well later on in the draft. And really, Xavier McKinney, who they drafted in the second round, neither one of us can believe that McKinney was still on the board when the first round came to a close, right? So they did okay in that realm. I thought your Jets did fine. I thought the Giants did fine. For me, the big loser in this draft, a team that I look at and I say, what in the world were you thinking? I didn't like Seattle's draft at all. Front to back, I thought the Seahawks had the worst draft in the NFC West.
It's underwhelming, yeah.
I thought the Houston Texans were very below average as well.
Well, their GM's an idiot.
Insanity. Here's the question I ask now. Was it worth it to give up what you did to get Laremy Tunsil? Was it worth it to give up what you did to get Brandon Cooks? because honestly, the best draft pick that this team had, that was Ross Blacklock. That was it. That was the best draft pick that the Texans had. And you're right, as far as what we continue to see from Bill O'Brien, he continues to make blunder after blunder. So if you're a Houston Texans fan, you too have got to be sitting there thinking, what in the world is going on? So my two big losers in this draft, I didn't like Seattle. I definitely didn't like the Texans. I feel bad for Deshaun Watson. That receiving core is really, for me, that receiving core, I sit back and I look at it and think,
never healthy,
wow.
Yeah. I'll never stay healthy.
And then again, like I mentioned, I wasn't a big fan with Seattle. But the big winners for me, Minnesota, and I did like San Francisco quite a bit. But Baltimore, I don't think you can overlook what the Ravens did as well. And the Ravens are known for this. The Ravens are just known for really drafting well. I love the Patrick Queen selection. Devin Duvernay, I thought that this is a receiver that can really fly. You know who else I didn't like? I didn't like Philly. I didn't think the Eagles actually had that great of a draft.
The Jalen Hurts pick is, you know, with Buffalo, how they drafted from, thought that Jalen Hurts was kind of a wasted pick. But again, maybe they don't have the faith in Carson Wentz staying healthy long term.
You know what the big difference is between Philly drafting Hurts and Buffalo drafting from? Philly drafted Hurts in the second round.
Yeah, it's crazy because he wasn't going to go in the second round. He probably doesn't go in the third round, and if he's still there, you can get him in the third instead of wasting a second.
Yeah, maybe he goes in the second. Maybe someone trades up to get him, because apparently Jacob Eason was not deemed draftable by a lot of squads, obviously, and Jacob Fromm's stock plummeted, which didn't surprise me. I thought Fromm should have went back to Georgia to begin with, but all in all, those were some real big question marks that I had in the NFL draft. I thought it was very entertaining. I watched every selection for two straight days over the course of Friday and Saturday. I really enjoyed myself Sunday. I was like, wow, we don't have anything but The Last Dance to watch now. Out of time of the show today. We will be back to do it again tomorrow. Tomorrow, we will be joined by Craig Bowler-Jack, longtime voice of the Utah Jazz. I'm really looking forward to that interview. I think we're going to have a great conversation with Bowler. That'll be on the show tomorrow. We have a couple of other great guests lined up throughout the week as well. Thank you to Coach Bill Evans. We'll be back to do it again tomorrow. Be safe. I am out.